It's okay. I have beer. I don't need to buy M&Ms.
I'm sleepy.
I'm dopey.
I'm bashful.
That's not one of the friggin'...
Actually, it is!
Bashful's one of the seven.
Oh, okay.
What does Jeff know about Snow White? Ah, oh, schooled you.
I know a lot about Snow White because in Snow White, the dwarves had no names.
Because in Snow White, in The Huntsman, Snow White apparently is badass, but played by Brick Christian Stewart. Yeah.
And Thor's in it.
For some reason.
He picks weird movies, that guy. It's like, I'm gonna be in Star Trek, and then Thor, and then this movie about Snow White.
Yeah, but at least in Star Trek, he was a different character. Yeah. In Snow White, it's just Thor. Instead of a hammer, he's got an axe. And he can't fly.
That we know of.
Yeah, well.
You might not have felt like it.
Maybe.
Okay, pick of the week. Someone go first.
I'll go first. Movie came out a little while ago. Friend recommended it to me. I found it on Blu-ray fairly cheap about a week ago. Called Limitless. Starring Bradley Cooper of Hangover fame. Robert De Niro is also in it. The basic plot is... Bradley Cooper is a writer. He looks like a writer. He looks like utter hell when we first see him in the movie. And he's got severe writer's block. He has a book contract, but he can't seem to get started on his friggin' book. So after several days or months or very long time in a bar, trying to get his motivation going, he can't do anything. He runs into his ex-brother-in-law, a drug dealer, who gives him a pill, which he takes, and gets the first one for free, as all drug dealers usually do. And for 24 hours, he is ultra smart, ultra motivated, super clear-headed. He knocks out 30 pages in one day. He is he does everything. He's amazing. He cleans up his life. He gets everything going for one day, and that one day is over, and everything's right back to hell again. He goes over to his brother-in-law, and madness ensues. By the end, he's running for the Senate seat of New York. I won't spoil anything for you, but when I saw this in the trailers in theaters, like, that doesn't look very interesting. I got the Blu-ray. It's very interesting. Pick it up.
Okay, thanks for that. How about you, Sam?
My pick of the week goes to a podcast called The Geek Parent, which... is hosted by a friend of Scott's, and her name is Becca, and it's only on its second episode, but I had the pleasure on Tuesday night to discuss children's literacy with her, and it was really exciting. So hopefully that'll drop within the next week or so, and you can go have a listen about our thoughts on the way in which literacy has changed over the years, how we can get more boys to read, all that kind of fun stuff, plus some of my really awesome book recommendations.
A whole podcast where Sam can talk about her favorite books. You must have had fun with that one.
Yes. Yes, I did.
I can just imagine. Scott?
Yeah. Okay, so my pick is going to the riff tracks of Breaking Dawn Part 1. because damn, those guys can keep that much crap entertaining through the power of comedy. They're supermen. Super comics. I mean, there's a very long, there's a long series where every time Jacob walks into a room, they just say, "Oh, sorry about abduction." It was amusing.
Apparently.
But moving on, last episode, I totally kind of half-jokingly said that if you drew us a picture of a Doom Zeppelin with spinner rims on it, you would get a $5. And yeah, no, that's a real contest now. Draw us a Doom Zeppelin, post it on our Facebook, and you will randomly win either $5 or something out of the bag of mystery.
Trust me, you want the $5. I've seen the bag of mystery. There's nothing good in it.
Shut up, Jeff. You're ruining the bag of mystery.
Take the $5. Draw your Doom Zeppelin. $5. The bag of mystery is dark, horrible, and possibly you should be lit on fire. And then stomped on. But anyway.
All right, then.
Just saying.
Anyone have anything else to say before we go to the main topic? No? Sam?
I'm good.
Okay.
She wants us to die in a fire.
Yeah. See? Everyone who says Sam is their favorite? She wants us all to die in a fire.
Well, not the listeners, just you two fools.
She's panning against us, you realize that.
Are you sure?
Stop turning the listeners against us, Sam.
Well, apparently I'm their favorite, and therefore their overlord, and therefore I can program them to do whatever I please. Not that I want this ability, but they gave it to me, so... I don't know.
I do believe we have just seen the beginning of the apocalypse right here.
Probably.
Could be.
I always knew it'd start with Sam. Didn't know how I knew, but I always knew.
I love you too, Jeff. Guess what? If it's the apocalypse, you're going to die.
That's kind of the definition of apocalypse.
I'm just saying, it means you're going to die because of me.
Hey now. Well, I don't know about this dying during the apocalypse. Speaking as a survivor of both the Rapture and Y2K, I think I'll be fine through the apocalypse.
You mean through Apocalypse Sam?
Yeah.
Sam.
The Sampocalypse will be fine.
You realize the Sampocalypse is mostly going to be filled with fluffy puppies and kitties and cute things, right?
That rip your face off.
Dude, have you not seen pictures of our dog?
Just saying. If there's going to be a Sampocalypse.
Seriously, have you not seen pictures of
animals?
Dakota?
Yes, I have. I'm just saying. If it's a Sampocalypse,
realize,
there will be bunnies and puppies and kittens and all sorts of cute stuff that jump on your face and rip it off.
Well, that's Dakota's job.
Fair enough.
I'm training her already to do that. She knows how.
Mostly,
she smiles at you and goes, "Hey, I'm Dakota. Bite."
The dog talks?
No, this is what we picture, Scott and I picture her saying. She gives you this look like, "Hi, I'm Dakota, by the way." Yum. I'm also convinced Dakota tells me to fuck off when, I'm not being apparently nice to her. But what else
is
new?
Scott!
What?
She's talking to dogs!
Scott talks to dogs.
Yes, but he doesn't believe the dogs talk back!
No, he does. He has conversations with her.
She mostly just barks at me.
See?
Okay, so, yeah. Main topic. We're starting...
See you later, guys. Bye!
We are starting the Summer of Giant Robots, which will go until we've run out of giant robots to talk about next summer.
Seriously? Seriously? This is what I signed on for today? I'm definitely out now. No Summer of Giant Robots.
But you love robots, Sam. You love them.
Chicks,
bullshit.
Big giant robots.
Oh, wait, I did say
chick,
in a previous
therefore,
episode.
By definition,
not
big giant
every
robots.
Chick Not every chick likes giant robots, boys. In fact, most women look at that and go, wow, it's a reflection of man's penis. That's okay. I'm just saying, you know, not every woman thinks a giant robot is a sexy beast.
But we're talking about Full Metal Panic.
I mean, I'm an exception because I'll tell people heavy arms. But, you know, exactly. And the giant robots in the show are not really the main focus. It's really not. Just throwing that out there.
Yeah. So, this is a series got its start as light novels by Shoji Gato. Later, a manga, and then a TV show from Gonzo. Then two different TV shows from Kyoto Animation, which were much better. Where do we want to start with this thing? Characters? Something? Setting?
Well, let's start with the...
What's there to talk about with the setting?
Well, it's weird.
ISIS drama with giant robots.
Well, there is this weird alt history thing in the background.
True.
Where, like, the Cold War never ended, but China split into two separate states, and then crazy psychic kids somehow managed to steal technology schematics from the future with psychic powers, which has led to all sorts of crazy, ridiculous weapons like giant robots running around in 1998.
Blah, 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 blah. Can I just say that Sam's actually right about this? The whole backstory, even for the most part, the giant robots and the battles are secondary. The whole premise in which this show is built around, at least at first, especially in the second season of Fumofu, is fish out of water. Sosuke is a soldier to the bone. He is nothing like a regular, everyday teenage boy. He is a walking machine gun. He thinks everything is military-based. And then you put him in a, you know, fairly average Japanese high school. It just doesn't work. He doesn't know what the hell he's doing.
He just has no concept of. He's looking at it as learning? What's this? You mean shooting?
Right.
And it's adorable. Like,
I demand a plain roll shooting the air. Boom, boom.
Like, you gotta love the fact that what they decided to do is, yes, it's about Chidori, who is the lead female protagonist, and her psychic abilities and whatnot, and the fact that Sosuke has to protect her. That's all well and dandy, but for the first half of the season, that, again, is very secondary, because it's all about Sosuke trying to adapt to a situation that he is not used to, has no desire to actually be in, and really just wants to complete his objective to the fullest. He's such a soldier, but at the same time, he's also so narrow-minded that just he doesn't see outside of the box half the time. Because he's told, complete your objective, complete it to the best that you can do, which is perfection as far as he's concerned, and don't fuck up. Those are like the three things he gets told, and he takes it to the letter. And that's partially why he's so awkward on the show and why he's adorable. Because he's very sincere at the same time in the way in which he presents himself. You know, like when he's learning how to be a Japanese high school student, you can tell that everybody just kind of looks at him like he's weird or crazy, except for the other kids who think military and mechs are cool. They think he's, like, the greatest thing since sliced bread. But for the girls in the school, particularly Chidori, they know there's something not right with him. Especially because, you know, stalker tendencies.
Well, I think everyone realizes there's something not right with him. It's just those military otaku and those mech heads, we really don't care that there's something wrong with him.
No.
He's so cool.
He's the coolest, so why would you... Why
so,
would
yeah,
you
he's a little off. But we don't really care at this point.
Because he can tell us everything we want to know about the giant robots.
Right.
Like I said, he makes friends, believe it or not. As much as he's really awkward and military-based, you gotta laugh at the fact that he does make friends with the mech heads. Completely by accident. Right?
But who else is he gonna make friends with?
Exactly. So you gotta love the fact that he's kind of bumbling his way through high school. But he doesn't treat it, obviously, like high school. He treats it as an objective.
Well, he's on a mission. Remember, the whole time he's there, he's been given a mission. Protect this girl. At all costs, protect this girl. You're going to go undercover as a high school student. So he's really not a high school student in his mind. This is not what he's here for. It's just some cheap cover that he's using. But he's undercover as himself. He's using his real name. He's using his real personality. But in his mind, no, this isn't me. This is some undercover job. I'm just here to protect the girl.
Yep.
The fact that I'm in a school is secondary. That's not exactly what I'm here for. And if I hadn't, and if he happens to make some friends with some nerdy mech heads, eh.
Well, it's not just that. The funny aspect, I guess, of his character is that eventually he does start to believe, in some cases, that yes, he is a part of a high school.
Right.
Towards the end, it becomes second nature. Go to school every day, do your homework, that sort of thing. It almost seems like he transitions from the whole military spec ops to actual proper student by the end of the series. It doesn't mean the military spec ops aspect goes away, but it's just there's this neat adaption that you see in Sosuke as a character. He actually has a lot of growth. And, you know, for a main character, you want to have a lot of growth, and you want the growth to make sense. And for Sosuke, it oddly does. And just the way in which he, yes, his objective comes first and foremost, but you gotta love the fact that he eventually just enjoys the adaptation of high school life.
Well, that's one of the interesting things about his character. When he first gets the job, he doesn't want it. He really doesn't want it. He's like,
nope.
Give me something else to do. I'll friggin' mop the floors. Anything. And by the end of the series, he doesn't want to go back to the military life. He's perfectly happy where he is. They start giving him, he goes into the desert for so long. He gives that little temporary mission, which was god-awful, I might add.
Yay, but, filler arcs.
Yeah, that was so bad. But when he goes there, he's miserable the whole time. He wants to get back to his life. He wants to get back to his new life, anyway. He wants to go back to his friends. He wants to go back to, the high school life. He wants to go back to Chittery. He wants to go back there, despite the fact that his whole life has been in military fighting in giant robots.
Which is so damn cool.
Right, which is so damn cool, but he's sick of it.
He's sick of it. No, it's true.
And he doesn't realize he is sick of it until he gets option B. Then he realizes, oh, this is the other option I could have in my life. This is a hell of a lot better than getting shot at all the time.
I think the greatest aspect of Sosuke as a character, though, is that, the growth is consistent in the series. It's not like he just snaps one day and then just changes. You actually gradually see it all. And for the most part, he comes across very insensitive at the beginning of the story, just because he just doesn't understand anything. Like, when he talks to Chittery, and he, tells her, you shouldn't act certain ways, or you shouldn't behave certain ways, he's not very sensitive to the fact that she has her own personal problems. So to watch him grow from being very insensitive to, the complete opposite, where, he starts to have a little bit more sensitivity towards, especially the female cast, because that's part of his problem, is that he just sucks with girls. He has no concept of girls. Girls are that thing that stand there and look nice.
Well, the only girl in his life is Major Mao, who, let's face it, not exactly feminine.
Well, and then there's also Tessa, which is, I think
she's stupid.
Well, Tessa's the worst character in the show, and I can backwards and forwards tell you why she's the worst character on the show. But we're not going to get to her quite yet, are we?
We could.
Why not? Go ahead and go with Tessa.
Go for it. Sam hates women. Let's do it. It's been a while.
It's not that I hate women, because I don't hate Chittery on this show. I actually quite like Chittery, but that's because she's a nut job.
She's just a shrew.
She's a shrew, but she's a funny shrew. That's
yeah, but you'd
thing.
Think...
She's the walking embodiment of tease.
Yeah, but you'd think that by the end of all this, by the end of the third series, when it's like, oh, hey, maybe I realize exactly how important it is I don't get kidnapped. Maybe he's not totally wrong to be a little paranoid about everything. No, I'm just going to smack him and berate him again.
Right.
Yes, but remember that she's also the type of girl who doesn't tell boys she likes them. So abusing Sosuke is her way of saying, I really like you. Oh, I beat you to a pulp. I'm sorry. You have to remember that she's a different kind of socially awkward. Wherein Sosuke has no concept of social skills, Chittery's the opposite. She has lots of social skills. It's just when it comes to confronting things about herself, she has a lot of problems because she has a lot of pride in herself. She thinks she's the greatest thing since sliced bread. Why? Because the people in the school gave her that logic. they said, well, you're the most popular girl in school, and therefore you're amazing. And she relishes in it. She thinks it's the greatest thing ever. It's like, yeah, I don't have to worry about my position because everybody loves me. However, when Sosuke comes into the picture and she starts to develop a crush on him, she has no concept of interacting with somebody like him because he's a dweeb. Right?
Dweeb but, being a technical term.
Yeah. He's a dweeb, and she looks at him like, well, I don't know why I have a crush on this guy. He keeps saving me, and that's sort of where it starts. But as the show goes on, you start to see the crush develop more, and you start to see her try to explain herself. She tries. You know, it's like the boy who sits behind you in math class. He pulls your pigtails, and that's his way of saying, I like you, I like you, by tormenting the crap out of you. That's essentially what Chidori does. When she beats up on Sosuke, that's her being like, I like you, I'm pulling your hair, and getting kidnapped a lot.
A lot. And Tessa?
Worst character in the goddamn show.
Because?
Tessa is everything I hate in a female character, because Tessa is the one, first off, she's the captain of a ship. And she doesn't know what she's doing.
You want to say that she's the captain of the ship in the same way that a mascot is the captain of the team? She is the mascot for that ship. She doesn't run anything. She is like the guy dressed up as a giant bulldog at a Georgia Tech game. She is a mascot. She doesn't if you ever watch her, she doesn't actually do anything. The only time she gives an order is when one of the real captain looks at her and pretty much says, okay, you can say the order now.
Well, part of Tessa's problem is that she's pretty much just there to be a puppet, right? But the problem with her as a character is that because she doesn't do anything, she has no concept of interacting with people. She's dumb as a stick when it comes to interaction, and not dumb in the stick in the way that Sosuke is. Sosuke, it's completely understandable why he has no social skills. He grew up completely isolated. For her, it's more of a case of just, she comes across so weak and so frail, and every time that she tries to pretend that she's a badass, she fails at it so hard. And it's just a point where she doesn't realize the things that she's doing are wrong. And she doesn't care half the time that what she's doing is wrong. So how do you sympathize with that? You don't feel sorry for her. It's like, you're being weak and pathetic. Stop it. Either shit or get off the pot and be useful, or go sit in the goddamn corner and let everybody else do it. And that's my issue with her, is she never shits and get off the pot. Seriously.
Very, very interesting metaphor. But
sorry, I will say that daughter.
Just saying, that's a little. You're on a roll today, Sam. I'll give you that. But anyway,
Is Tessa likable, Jeff?
I'll give you this point. You are right. She is a few sandwiches short of a picnic. She's not the brightest bulb in the box, but I think that's partially. And she is socially awkward in the fact that she thinks she tries to be a badass and fails miserably. But that's part of what she was, raised to be. She's been protected and guarded because she is their whispered. She's their psychic. They need one. They can't, expect to win without one. So we're going to put this one as our captain, in quotation marks, at the center of this fortress. So no one, absolutely no one, is getting to her.
Except for the problem where
every gun on the ship.
Except for one problem, Jeff. How many times does Tessa disobey?
Exactly. And
how many times does she try to sabotage the relationship between Chidori and Sosuke?
Because she's got the
She's jealous, because she thinks that Sosuke is her eternal lover, when Sosuke is just like, I like robots. I like guns.
But she's very childish. She's like a 6 or 7 year old.
No, exactly. And I think that's why, to be honest, I mean, between the two women, truthfully, I like Chidori, but I don't love her. Whereas I despise Tessa, because I think that her antics are something, while completely understandable, are also obnoxious. And she is completely obnoxious. I mean, if you think back to the episode where she transfers to the school just because she's jealous that Sosuke pays attention to Chidori, when she doesn't realize it's Sosuke's mission to pay attention to Chidori. It's not that he has a crush on her. But she misinterprets the entire situation, runs on an assumption, then goes home crying because, oh my god, Sosuke doesn't like me. You don't feel sorry for that. You just don't.
I don't feel sorry for her, but it's one of those cases, I don't hate her because it's pretty easy to understand the way she is.
I understand her. I just find her really irritating. She's the type of female character that, for me personally, offends me as a woman.
I'll use this analogy. You'll like this one. You can't hate a puppy dog for chewing on furniture. They don't know any better.
I like my puppy. Right, my puppy's badass, though.
Yes. Yeah, we also wouldn't put our puppy in the captain's chair.
True.
No, I'm smart enough to do that. That's
but,
where,
but
again,
you would make, but you would sure as heck make that puppy a mascot.
Yeah, but I still don't know if I agree with this mascot idea. I don't know if I 100% agree with it because she really does believe she's the goddamn captain.
Oh, she believes it. I don't argue that at all. I think everyone else thinks she's the bloody mascot.
It's debatable. I mean, I just find for Tessa, part of the problem with her character is just if she wants to be a badass and stuff, you know, it's like she has to find a way to make herself out to be this amazing heroine. And then she always has to do it in front of Chidori. It's always like, I'm better than you. Like, she's the catty girl who has no concept of even being catty, to make matters
worse. Because she's like, she looks like a 16, 17-year-old girl. She's like 7 or 8. Because she just hasn't, she's lived on that shit most of her life. She's been coddled and protected and defended. And everyone around her has treated her like a queen. And then she gets out in the real world and things don't go her way.
Yeah.
Shit happens.
Yeah, and she just doesn't get it.
But I think, like Sosuke, when she first shows up, she is that annoying brat of a kid who just can't get it. But as the series goes on, I think she evolves a little bit too. Granted, she's not as big a change as Sosuke is by the end of it, but I think she's, you know, matured a little bit.
She does mature, so you have to give credit where credit's due. She matures, but then you see her in Fumafu and in Second Raid, and she goes back to the same bad habits all over again. So you have to wonder a little bit why they made the decision at the end of the first series to give her all that growth and then to throw it out the window in the previous two.
Okay. That's a good lead-in to Fumofu. Cause it's my personal favorite because...
It's mine, too.
It's all about comedy. Can I... probably the hardest I've ever laughed in my life at an anime show is during the onsen scene.
Where, oh, God. Yeah, when Nerdy Guy...
When Shinji is rushing the women's bath, which he thinks to be is the women's bath, and he goes in seed mode, but instead of a seed, it's a pair of panties that drops.
Well, no, he awakens as a new type, right. Starts screaming Char's lines from, like, episode 37 of Gundam.
Right.
And then it's like, this isn't enough, I need to dodge more defenses. Seed mode, activate!
But it's not seed mode, it's panty mode.
Yep.
And he gets past all the guns and runs right into Sosuke's junk. Dead square in the face. And Sosuke's just sitting there.
Sosuke's, the bath changes over at 10.
The bath changes over when it gets dark. He's like, damn.
Yeah, Fumufu is just brilliant.
Well, come on. It gave us the mascot suit powered armor.
Bontakun
awesome.
Mecha armor.
Yeah.
Not just Botakun mecha armor, it's the fact that, like, it has the little noises, and it's adorable.
And the fact that it actually works, and they turn it into an actually military outfit. It's like, hey, this works pretty damn well.
It's camo, man. It's good public camo.
Nobody's gonna shoot at this cute thing. Let's just send that on the battlefield. It'll really screw with the people's heads.
Like, this was just, like, the writers going as insane as possible. It's like, well, what could they do? Let's have them go on a bicycle chase all through town.
Right.
And then Sosuke resolves all his arguments by shooting people with beanbag rounds out of a shotgun. Okay, so you've got the karate club guy who keeps jumping out, who's sworn eternal vengeance on Sosuke for some reason, and keeps jumping out and challenging him to duels for Sosuke to just bean him in the face with slug rounds out of a shotgun.
I love the final episode where he accidentally opens a bio, or what he thinks is a bioweapon, and the whole class gets quarantined.
Yeah.
Once he mentions what he's done, the whole class turns demon and they're about to rip his head off. And at the very end, he comes back on screen after the credits have rolled and he goes, please help me, get me the hell out of here. And in the English dub version, they actually did a little outside the box where Chris Patton even said, okay, that was a good take. And then the chittery voice actor says, Chris, we're not done yet. He goes, huh? Oh, okay, yeah.
See, my favorite two episodes from FumiFo were actually at the very beginning. One was obviously the one about the buns. Just because, gotta love Sosuke for planting bombs in the ball, like, different kinds of, you know,
booby trapping the bread shipment.
And just the way in which, you know, this is his way of getting, making sure he gets his plain role, but also making sure that everybody's well protected because somebody's causing problems. And it's just the way that he's like, you know, side effects may include heartache, you know, sneezing, and nausea. And just the way, like, it's the matter of factness of the way he says it just always makes me laugh. Especially because, you know, then there's Chittery going, why are you doing that plain role? Like, he's very sincere about it. Like, that's the sad part is,
I wanted, like, my plain role.
He wanted his plain role, and it makes perfect sense in his mind.
Yeah. No, I've got it. The rugby club episode.
Oh, the rugby club episode.
Like, he takes the pacifist rugby team and puts them through the Full Metal Jacket Apocalypse Now, like, drill sergeant montage. And they literally murder the opposing team.
This, you know, weakling little team. 1 week with Sosuke, they are friggin', you know, death machines.
Aww.
You will die horribly, and we will be the ones.
I also love the love letter one. Especially just for the parts like, meet me behind the gymnasium. I'll kill you.
Someone tampered with my locker. The safest way to deal with that? Explode all the lockers.
It's like, Sosuke, it's a love letter. No, it's not. And then gotta love the fact that there's a girl standing under a light post waiting for him. And what's he doing? He's under a crap ton of camo, pointing a gun at her as if to say she's the enemy. And it's just like,
she's waiting to ambush him, damn it.
But you know what? It's one of those scenes where it's just, you know, if you're a girl watching it, it's just like, God, could you be more dense, right? But you smile because, again, you have to think of Sosuke in the way that he is. He may have had a ton of growth, but he still has no concept of women.
Right. Growth can only get you so far.
It's endearing, right? And I think it's just the way that the voice acting did it. Because he has that image of the burly man. Like, even though it's a woman's voice, there's, like, this burly man in the background writing the letter to him. It's like, has to be a man with, you know, who can fake women's writing really well. And just the assumptions he comes up with are so funny. I kind of want to watch it now.
Well, it's also worth pointing out at this point that the English dub on this show is fantastic.
Yes, better than the Japanese, actually.
Probably the best dub out of Texas I can think of. For a lot of things.
This is one of the few shows where, again, I prefer watching it in English over Japanese, and it's just because the English cast does such a phenomenal job of really giving us the kind of performances we need to connect to the characters. Chris Patton in particular, you gotta love the man. He does this deadpan voice so perfectly. And it's just the way that he really shows just how inept Sosuke is. Like, you get a feel for it when he speaks some of the lines and stuff. It's just, it's really well done. And I love Lucy Christian as Chittery, just because Lucy Christian knows how to overreact.
Right.
In her characters. And Chittery is queen overreaction. So it works out really well.
Well, I thought it was interesting. I was at an anime convention where Chris Patton was there, because Patton does a ton of anime conventions. And it was right after the first series had just dropped. And, of course, he was promoting it, because he wanted sales to be up. And he said, The best thing about this is Sosuke and Chittery. Sosuke is deadpan against everything. You know, the world could be blowing up. He's not, you know, batting an eyelash. Chittery is the exact opposite. She breaks a nail, it is the end of the friggin' world. And you put those two together, comedy ensues.
Well, and it's like the perfect match. It's like watching The Odd Couple. And you watch it, and you're just like, wow, they couldn't be more polar opposite. But it makes perfect sense.
Right.
As you watch the show. I actually have. Scott was really sweet. I was sick one day, and he met Chris Patton, and he got my DVD signed. Mm. And then a couple of years before that, I actually met Vic Mignogna, and I got him to sign my Kurtz DVD.
Sandwich thief.
Yes, the sandwich thief.
But it was really sweet because, you know, I was really upset. I was going to bring my Generator Gall DVDs, and he looked at me. He's like, "That's okay. I'm just impressed. Do you know what that is?" And I was like, "Really?" He goes, "It was my first show. It was also my first giant robot show." I was just like, "You're so cute." Then I realized he has a really creepy fan club at cons.
They all have really creepy fan club at cons.
Yeah.
I didn't really notice it when I met him, because I was just kind of really happy and...
Every voice actor, no matter how good or bad, has a group that follows him around at cons that are really creepy.
Interesting.
I heard some very scary stories from Tara Strong. I'll just leave that alone.
Yeah. As for the other people in English dub, we've got Allison Keith as Mao, basically being Misato all over again.
Pretty much.
And a show that ends much better for her.
Oh, yeah.
Like a show that gets to be lighthearted and fun.
Yep. And then you have Vic, who's Kurtz Weber.
We didn't even
talk about him, and he's brilliant. Especially in Fumafu. His two episodes that he appears in, he's Mr. Operation Panties.
Right. He's the one who's running...
The show.
Right. Well, he's the one who's running up the hill trying to get into the women's bath. And he goes into seed mode. And I would pay real money to be in the room when Vic Mignogna was doing that, just because I don't know how many takes it took, but it must have been funny as hell.
You gotta love the fact that also for however long he's been Mao's partner, he probably still hasn't seen her tits.
Interesting analogy, but okay.
Well, you know, I don't know if you pay attention to the fandom on this one, but everybody thinks that they're like the canon couple on the show. It's not actually Chidori and Sosuke. Because of the fact that they have some of the most awkward sexual tension on the show. So everybody just thinks, well, clearly they want to be together. And I'm thinking, Mao doesn't like the fact that he's a big perv.
Right.
Meanwhile, Mao is a big perv.
Yeah, well, that's kind of the thing. It's another one of those, Mao is a perv, but she's very closet about it. She doesn't say anything. On the other side is...
His super open pervert.
He is, you know, broadcasting it on a billboard.
Nothing like listening to a young girl taking a shower. That's one of my favorites.
Like, you
hello, Japanese schoolgirls.
This is what I like. I'm not ashamed of it.
It's just, you know, like, you gotta love Kurtz. I mean, he is the sniper of the bunch, which you would never guess considering how uppity he is. But you'll love him because, for him, he is a zest for life. You know, everything with
him
is...
That's one way of putting it. He has a zest for something.
Okay, and a zest for boobies. And
yes, well,
what else is new?
We all
do, saying,
but he's really public about it.
You know what? For Kurtz as a character, for the most part, we know that in the original series he actually has some conflict in him. But you gotta love the fact that he just deals with it. And he just kind of marches to the beat of his own drum. He does whatever he pleases. And he has a really good attitude about life, for the most part. I mean, other than life is also made of boobies and whatnot, but good attitude. What?
Just saying. I think you're going a little deep there. But anyway, moving on to the third series, The Second Raid, which is
To be confusing.
Well, it's just a play on words. No, they're not doing a second panty raid. I kind of wish they did because it would have helped the series. But anyway.
You know what? Actually, as this one is sort of serious, that apparently they decided when they were adapting this particular light novel, they needed to get all the silly out. So they did 13 episodes of silly to do this one serious story.
Right.
And I gotta say, as much as I miss the humor, there's that one scene where you actually see in the inside, you get to in Sosuke's head as he's getting the haircut, and it's like, don't worry, no need to panic, she's just gonna cut my hair, she's not gonna try and stab me. This apron thing is to keep the hair off my shirt, she's not restricting my movements, and break, pulls a gun, runs out screaming. And I'm like, damn, that kid's fucked up.
Can you blame him?
Sosuke has got some issues.
Well, he was raised by KGB assassins.
Yes, well, what you gonna do?
What you gonna do?
Can I say, this series has a decent plot, but it does a couple, and it has some great villains. I know we didn't really hit them on way back when, but Gowron, the guy with the mech with the ponytail.
Yeah.
He was a badass villain. The whole time I was like, that guy's freaking badass. Don't screw with that guy. And even in this series, where he's pretty much bedridden and near death, he's still a badass the whole time.
Yeah.
But the whole reason this didn't work is they separated Sosuke and Chidori, the odd couple, from the get-go. Did the whole great thing about the series, even when it's in a serious moment, is having these two together so they can play off against each other. And they spent most of the series, doing their own thing. Sosuke, wandering around in the rain, having mental issues. Chidori inviting strangers up into love hotels so she can escape assassins, that kind of thing. And they're never together for most of the series, and that's what makes each other work, is they play off each other. So you're just like, okay, can we get them back on the same screen? Can we get them back on the same... Come on. Please. Series is almost over. Come on, hurry up. And then they finally do it near the end, but by then it's too little, too late.
Yeah, like, this would have been better had they maybe condensed the one novel into 6 episodes and then picked up with the next one for another 6 or something. Because that tension just doesn't... hold well over that long a period.
It's not I like the villains, and they had some good moments. Like, I don't even remember their names, but the two, the female twins that are psycho killers.
The psycho killer incestuous twins, yeah.
Yeah, that's just weird and creepy, and they're pretty scary on multiple
levels.
They're
scary, but I'll be honest, I didn't really feel like they added anything to the plot.
Well, they did, and they were stand-ins for Gowron, and turns out, yes, they're working for him.
They were woohoo!
They were kind of raised by him in a weird, creepy
way.
Yeah. When you start thinking about it, it gets really, really weird faster and faster. But anyway.
No, I mean, I really do agree with you guys. I was really disappointed by Second Raid, and it was just because a lot of the tension in the show does come from the fact that Sosuke and Chidori need to be together, right? He protects her, and she plays off of him, trying to remind him that, hey, being a sergeant is... okay, but learn to have a personality about it. I mean, you need the two of them together to have the chemistry at work. When you split them apart and you watch their tension, it's like Chidori is living her life, not really caring what's actually happening in Sosuke. He's just a ball of emo at this point. And it's not fun to watch. In fact, it's really dull to watch because nobody wants to watch Sosuke be a little ball of emo because it's just awkward and kind of disturbing.
Go ahead.
No, and it's just, and Chidori, well, she's not exciting or interesting on her own. So I think that was my beef, is just when you put the two of them away from each other, they're not interesting at all. The moment you put them together, there's so much excitement.
Well, I think the part of the thing where Sosuke does go all emo, I kind of understand that because, like I said, he's realizing, okay, I'm back to being a soldier again.
Which is lame.
Which I really don't want to do now. Despite the fact, when I first started doing this gig, that's all I wanted to do. I said, okay, I've seen the other side. I want to be with Chidori. I want to be in high school. I want to be this normal guy, despite the fact that I'm not. But this is what I want to do. Yet here I am, back on the friggin' battlefield, in the rain, hunting down, psycho nut jobs again. This sucks.
No, I mean, like, the emo-ness makes sense. It's just not interesting to watch.
Oh, it isn't. But
especially not
mean.
For, like, the 7 episodes it went
on. Well, I was
going
to say, well, the amount of episodes they did at Scott's
Raid. How many episodes is he wandering... Sorry. How many episodes is he wandering around in the rain?
Like, 3.
3 of them?
Just wandering around. I don't want to do this anymore. I can understand why he's upset. I understand...
It's just one of those, we get it. You're upset.
We get it. Move on. Can we move on to the next point?
I just felt like there was too much filler in Second Raid. It's like, yeah, you want to build the tension by showing like how they handle being apart, but at the same time, it's like condense that. It's unnecessary to draw it out the way that they do. This is the point where we're getting to Dragon Ball Z territory. Let's avoid that because it didn't help that show none.
I was going to go with
help there.
I was going to go with Endless Eight, Haruhi Suzumiya, but whatever.
I actually didn't watch, if it's the second season, I didn't watch that, so I I wouldn't know what you would reference there.
Same episode, 8 times in a row.
Pretty much.
That's just stupid. I mean, I already don't like Haruhi Suzumiya, but that, even for me, sounds dumb as all hell.
They thought it was artsy. But anyway.
They thought it was artsy. Clearly, they don't know what art is.
Anyway.
Speaking of artsy, I just found out the guy who writes these, he drew sceneries for Haruhi Suzumiya.
Weird.
Yeah.
Not really. There's plenty. There's, and we, if you watch Haruhi, there's a whole lot of Full Metal Panic references.
Yeah, well, that's just because they're both from Kyoto Animation. It's just weird that it's like, yep, I drew backgrounds for the Day of Sagittarius episode.
Listen, I don't think by any means Second Rate is horrendous. It just definitely doesn't live up to the previous two seasons where you have a lot of action, you have a lot of excitement, you have a lot of character growth. It was so lacking, and to be honest, it's like, well, Gowron is an awesome villain in the first season, and he's still pretty badass here in Second Raid. He just seems fruitless the whole time. It's like, I'm decrepit and old, and I'm still gonna try to, you know, do what I need to do, and it's like, okay, cool dude, you do that. Incest twins, though, that's a little creepy. Take those out. Don't like them. But I wasn't a fan of Second Raid. I just kind of thought it was very pointless for the most part, other than to show it's like, oh, they're apart. Oh, it's so sad. For me, it was more of get on with it.
Well, that was the whole point of Second Raid. They were trying to, you know, delve deeper into these characters' emotions.
Yeah, well, my logic is doing a little AB.
And also, it was kind of repetitive. I mean, it's like you said, yes, we understand you're upset. We know why you're upset.
Get on with it.
Yes, we still know why you're upset.
I just think
Know why you're upset. Please move on with it.
I just truthfully think this would have been better as like an OAV or something. I think the 13 episodes was a little bit drawn out and a little bit unnecessary. I think you could have easily done this in maybe 4 or 5 episodes. Like, the entire series really could have just been condensed to 5 episodes. And it would have done a better job, I think, than half the repetition tedium that it has. The only thing I am going to give it credit for is that the fight sequences with the armed slaves in Second Raid are pretty awesome. Especially between crazy incest twins and Sosuke.
And you don't really think of Kyoto Animation as a place you go to for action, either.
No, that's the thing, but oddly enough, I mean, one thing I've always liked is when they do incorporate the armed slaves into the show, they do a really great job with it. Like, the action's really fluid. You really care about the situation that's going on. And they're just really neat to look at. One episode in the first season I absolutely love is the school festival, where Sosuke brings the armed slaves to the school festival. And everyone's just like, what's this? And he's like, yay, look at my robot. My robot's amazing. And Shinji's just like, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen. And you see Shinji, like, jumping around. As if to say, like, this is so cool. You know, when they try to incorporate the armed slaves, I mean, it's not always done very well. But you gotta love the fact that they do try. Because, yes, it is military equipment. And we have to show that we're a part of the military and whatnot. I don't know. I just always liked the designs for the armed slaves. I thought they were really cool.
In season one, there were a couple of good moments with the armed slaves, but truthfully, they were, like I said, secondary at best.
Mm-hmm.
In season two, Fumofu, they weren't even there, but who cared? It was all about comedy.
It was season about three, they could.
In season three, they were the highlight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the best part of the mech battles. All right. Explosions. Giant robots fighting each other. Good times. But,
yeah,
like I said, they've led up that whole point with them being secondary, and then they were front and center. It just didn't work as well.
No, it doesn't. It kind of, the focus shift was just really awkward. It was just awkwardly done. It's like, well, you know, if you're going to make these first and foremost in the second season, why didn't it get enough emphasis in the first season? And then, you're right, completely non-existent in Fumafu. Which we get it, so Fumafu is more of a side story.
We get the Mecha Bontokun, so that kind of counts.
Exactly. Well, that's what I think they were trying to compensate with. It's like, we didn't give you arm slaves, but here's this really, really cute Bontokun.
Here's a giant robot teddy bear. Rock on.
He will murder you in your face.
And we'll give him to a SWAT team.
The Yakuza.
Yeah, the Yakuza was not the best idea.
Well, I love when Chidori gets kidnapped. What's Sosuke's reasoning? Okay, I'll just kidnap the guy's son and we can do an exchange. Not rescue her.
Yeah, no.
I'll just
prisoner exchange.
I'll just kidnap somebody else. We'll go. It all works out.
It does work out.
But final verdict, Full Metal Panic?
Well, it's all streaming up on the Funimation site right now, so you should totally be like, check it out, watch it all. It's all worth watching, even though second rate does drag a little. I think it's worth seeing for the action more than anything else.
Well, I think it's worth seeing because one was good. Season one was good. Fumofu was great. If you're going to go that far, you might as well finish up the third season. Is it good as the first two? Heck no. It's still good.
No, it's just fun to watch Gowron be all like, Lambda Driver! And then be all like, I still live! And me going like, oh, Gowron, you're adorable. Keep pretending you're awesome, honey. Keep going. It's funny. Where's the popcorn?
I really don't think adorable would be a good adjective for him, but sure, whatever.
I call all hideous things adorable, and he's hideous.
All right. Okay, now, here's the thing, is this movie is in some form of development hell for a U.S. live-action remake.
Sure it is.
It is.
It's like that Akira movie is.
No, it's... Like, Mandalay was trying pretty hard for a year or so a while back. But what would you want to see from a live-action American movie?
I wouldn't.
I'm with Jeff on this one. I also wouldn't want to see it done as a live-action movie. I have no desire to see it as a live-action movie because...
Let's put it this way. The whole point of Sosuke and Chidori, they could do that in live-action. Because it's just a simple Odd Couple parody. When have live-action robots ever worked out well?
Well, here's my conflict with it. It's having the right actors to do the Odd Couple bit. And to be honest, a character like Sosuke would be very difficult to replicate.
I don't think
just
so.
With a young actor.
Like, that's the thing. You'd need, like, an actor in his early 20s to do it.
My concern more is the sense of humor that comes from a character like Sosuke, where... His sense of humor is very Japanese. It's very deadpan, very slow. That is really hard to replicate for an American audience. The other problem I foresee, truthfully, is Chidori's portrayal. They would totally pick a character that would make her out to be like an evil bitch, as opposed to the fact that, yes, while she's a bitch, she's sincere. And I don't think they could do that, because I just foresee the awfulness of something like Mean Girls happening. I don't hate Mean Girls, but that's how I picture what they would do to that character.
Horrifying image of Lindsay Lohan as Chidori, just saying.
Well, there you go. That's
let's
what
just,
I mean.
Okay.
I just don't think truthfully that, I mean, let's face it, yes, the robot point, completely accurate, but the fact of the matter is the Japanese high school drama / comedy has a very distinctive tone about it, and it's not something that you could replicate on an American screen and do well.
I think they could do the story well. They could tweak it a little for American audiences, and I think they could do that well. I just foresee ending up with a G-Savior clone. Yes, I mentioned it. I just see this can't... I don't see them making this well. Even if they put in, you know, lots and lots of money into it, I just don't see how they could, you know, translate that to an American big-screen audience watching giant robots fight.
I'm sorry, I just don't see the sense of humor translating over well at all. Just because of the way certain aspects of it are, I just can't see it. I can't see it working, and I just truthfully don't want to see it. Mostly because you know how American films love when they rip off something from Japan. They totally change it full-blown to the point where it's like, well, what happened to the show or... product that you're adapting. What happened to it?
Well, that's what I said. If they made it into a live-action movie of Full Metal Panic, I think they could make a good movie. It wouldn't be Full Metal Panic, but they could tweak it enough for American audiences. They could change enough that it'd end up being a good movie. It just wouldn't be Full Metal Panic. And all the Full Metal Panic fans, what the hell is this? This isn't our show. And they're like, yeah, It isn't.
Well, you have to make wide audience appeal, and let's face it, how many times does Americans know how to remake a film and give it proper appeal? Most of the time, they don't even know what the Japanese film's doing in the first place. Drives me ballistic. I just truthfully, I'm on the camp of, I don't want to see it.
Me neither, but I'm just saying, if they saw it, I
think
they,
you know
it could
who
be
they'd
good.
Get, oh, you know who they'd get to do it to? Doucheface, what's his name, from The Hunger Games would be so skay.
You mean the one who played, you mean Liam Hemsworth?
No, no, the other one. The other one, Nathan Drake lookalike.
That's Liam Hemsworth, honey.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, I'm pretty
sure. I personally prefer Doucheface, Douchebag, what's his face, but whatever.
Yeah.
Let me double check this now, because I'm confused. I'm pretty sure Liam Hemsworth is Gale, honey.
That was the other way around.
No, but you're right. He is Nathan Drake lookalike.
Douchebag, what's his face?
Yeah, you're right. It is Liam Hemsworth. They get him to do it.
I just, you know what? Unfortunately, I picture, truthfully, Hollywood going the Zac Efron route, like a younger Zac Efron. And I think that would just bother me.
You know, this is going to sound odd, but at least in the terms of looks, the guy who they got to play Peter Parker in the next Spider-Man, he looks a hell of a lot like Sosuke.
Oh, Andrew Garfield.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like 30.
Yeah, but he looks a lot younger than he is.
Yeah, he does look, he's well preserved.
He looks like he looks 18, despite the fact that he's almost as old as I am, which is really sad now that I think about it. But anyway.
Well, you just haven't gotten enough facials.
No, my problem is I've looked like I was 30 since I was 18.
There is that.
Yeah. Sometime I'll find an old high school picture of me. I look pretty much the damn same. I looked old when I was young, and I haven't really aged since.
Okay.
Whereas you, I've seen older pictures of you. You look like a cast reject from the Twilight movies.
Shut your face.
Just saying.
Harpo.
I'm staying out of this one.
Just saying. In fact, a cast reject from one of the early Twilight movies where they all, you know, the only thing you're missing is this glitter. Which now I'm going to have to doctor one of your photos that I've found and, you know, put your glittery on and do some makeup and all sorts of fun stuff.
Great.
If you listen carefully, you can hear Scott deleting every photo he can find of him with his long hair.
Dang it.
This is why I don't get a lot of pictures taken of me doing stupid things. Thanks to the internet, it will never die.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so anything we want to say before we close this up?
Anyone who hasn't seen it, if they're a mech fan, don't go into it expecting a big, heavy mech show. Because it isn't. It's a comedy. But it's still fun.
It's tons of fun. Definitely one of the few shows worth watching out there, considering I don't even watch anime anymore, and it's a show that I can still enjoy, even after all the years of being like, anime got lame. But I still love you, Full Metal Panic.
Yeah, There aren't a lot of 10-year-old shows I keep around and try and watch every so often. This is definitely one of them. And if
you don't
bad...
even own it.
Yeah.
You inherited it.
Yeah, same way you don't really own G Gundam, honey.
We share, remember?
And I'm sorry that Tokyopop kind of died before they could get even, you know, half the novels out. I guess they just weren't selling at all, were they?
I am deeply
depressing.
I am deeply, deeply worried about Spice and Wolf not finishing, but that's an issue for another time.
Yeah. See, that one's new enough that it could get rescued.
Which
by
one?
Someone. Spice and Wolf.
It's still being issued, and Yen Press is doing it, but I'm just kind of worried. Like, we're at novel 6 out of 12. We got a long way to go.
Okay.
You never know, Jeff. You never know.
I'm just worried. That's all I'm saying. I like those novels, and I want to read all the way to the end, but we're not even close to the end. I'm worried.
Okay, catch you next time with more robots. We'll see which series we do next. And remember, Invincible Doom Zeppelin with spinner rims. Win something from the bag of mystery. Catch you next time.
I thought they smelled bad. On the outside!
Smell Bad on the Outside is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-alike License Version 3.0 International. Check our website at sbopodcast.blogspot.com for contact information.